We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big. Do you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hello, hello. Greetings and salutations. What's going on, everybody? It is a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am the most consistent motherfucker you know, and he is Robbie the Fire Bernstein, King of the Cocks. What's going on, brah?
Dude, this was an exciting week. I was watching impeachment hearings.
Debates.
Yeah, the news made it happen this week.
They brought it. Well, it's a fucking, you know... I political theater is a motherfucker. Like, I really do. And this is, I guess, just the position that this is the space that I occupy, right? As like an anarchist who does this show and loves commenting on this stuff. It's like, I fucking hate all of it, but I love all of it. Like, I love politics. I obviously, right? I mean, I could do something else with my fucking life. Like, I didn't need to do this. But it's like, I love the fucking theater of it. I love the circus. I love the bullshit of all of it. Like, it's fucking, you know, it's just, there's something so, like, fascinating about it all to me. But it's all so horrible.
Yeah.
It's this weird contradiction that you get caught in. Libertarians in general, it's this weird contradiction you get caught in where you focus so much on this thing that you think shouldn't exist at all.
Yes.
You're like, none of this should exist, but I'm going to consume hours upon hours.
I felt that about the impeachment hearings hard.
Yeah.
Because there were some other fascinating things that happened in the news this week. I've just been reading, I love reading about like capital flight migration between states as some states go bankrupt.
That's very interesting, yeah.
You had, there was some union dude who went down. They're just like all like these random topics. You got all this liquidity in the market stuff that's fascinating. Yeah. So much stuff that you could sit down
well,
and think
about. Well,
how about
the fucking Patriot Act was reauthorized?
Now, there you
that's
go.
That's a fucking pretty big story.
That's a big one.
Gets next to no attention. You know what I mean? Like, there's these big fucking stories, but everybody, and there's something about, what's so interesting about politics to me is, it's like, how do you rule people? There's something amazing about that. It's really an insight into human psychology. You can't just rule people and tell them you're ruled. I mean, you can, but it just doesn't work out that way. You have to create this entire show, this whole thing. You know, it's like doing a magic trick or something like that, right? Like I mean, I don't know much about magic, but I think the essence of a lot of sleight of hand and stuff like that is like get you to look over here while something over here is happening and you're not really focusing on over here. And everything's like, there are a lot of magic tricks, right? Where if you literally just, if you were right in front of me and I'm doing the trick, it's like, ooh, magic. But if you moved like 15 degrees over this way, you'd be like, oh no, that's not magic. You dropped it on your foot. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just like, if you just look at things from a different angle, this whole thing is a fucking house of cards.
You know, it was a big one. Trump signed off on the budget increase because they always do that. They're over budget, but sometimes they shut down the government. He signed off on that. He spent more than I think any president ever at this point.
Yeah.
But there's no one wants to have a conversation about debt. And myself, I got suckered in. I probably watched 20 hours of impeachment hearings this week because I wanted to know, is there anything here or am I just watching? Is it just a charade of bullshit? And that's all it is.
Oh, it's such fucking bullshit. It's such bullshit. I mean, here's the fucking story. I was on Kennedy the other night and I argued a bit with Juan Williams over this thing, which I, by the way, Juan Williams, really cool guy off camera. You know, he's just a Democrat and, you know, his politics suck, but he's a good guy. We were arguing and I love it when Kennedy, the question she asked me, but she just goes like, she goes, so big picture, what's the deal with this impeachment thing? Like, what's your take on it? And, you know, Kennedy's like, I love when she sets me up to just give my bigger thoughts on the whole thing. And she goes, she's like, Dave Smith, fighter for liberty. What's the big picture on this? And I was like, okay, so the big picture is that, yeah, Trump wanted them to look into the Bidens. Now, was it a clear deal? Are you ever going to get Donald Trump saying, or someone on saying, you will only get this military aid if you look into the Bidens? Probably, almost certainly not. And it's not clear that that's exactly what was going to happen. And by the way, that didn't happen. None of this happened. They got the military aid and didn't look into the Bidens. So like none of the, it's, did he attempt to do it? At best, you're going to get like a wink and a nod. You know, like, okay, we can't, you get what he wants you to do. Maybe you should do that to be on his good side. That's the best you're going to get. And I go, we've never in the history of our country impeached and removed a president. It's unprecedented. It's never happened before. So you're telling me this scandal of him wanting the Bidens to be investigated is so big that we've got to do that for the first time ever. I go, here's the previous scandals. Obama, and I just threw it. Just rattled off a few. I go, Obama armed Al-Qaeda in Syria. Obama put American citizens with no charges on a kill list. George W. Bush instituted torture and lied us into a war. Bill Clinton starved children in Iraq to death and murdered children in Waco, Texas. George H.W. Bush and Jesus Christ, how am I blanking on his fucking name? Reagan. Jesus. Took me a while to get Ronald Reagan out. Reagan and George H.W. Bush shipped cocaine into the country to help terrorists while they were fighting a war on drugs and locking up American citizens for using cocaine. Like,
fucking okay. Baller, dude.
Yeah, I mean, all of them. Ballers, fuck. Gangster. But like, so how can you with a straight face tell me this is the scandal that someone should be impeached and removed for? And then Juan Williams responded, he was like, well, it's an abuse of power. And I was like, were those other things not abuses of power? Like, you know, so that's, it's just also, all so ridiculous.
Also, it's an odd abuse of power in that if he's right, imagine what you might untangle. If the Clintons and the Bidens were really working with Ukraine to undermine the Trump's, you know, Trump's run, that's something that really does undermine democracy, and we should look into.
Right. If you guys care so much about undermining democracy, you'd probably want to get to the bottom of this. And if you cared so much about using foreigners to help investigate a political opponent, you'd be outraged that Hillary Clinton used Christopher Steele. It's all such fucking bullshit. But even when Juan Williams says it's an abuse of power, it's like, well, no, I'm sorry. And this is a real problem for the Democrats. At best, it's an attempted abuse of power. He didn't do it. It didn't work. That's the problem. I mean, you know, like you've got attempted abuse of power at best.
And also in a slick way. Okay, we can all look at the situation and go, clearly he was trying to do that, but he never verbally stated it. It's like, you know, that scene in Half-Baked when they're buying the drugs and he needs them to actually say what the drugs are. And so they keep being like, well, you want the Witched Willies or whatever? And they're like, well, we don't. He goes, you two must be the dumbest drug dealers I've ever seen. Fucking crack. I'm selling you or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
That's a little bit like the Trump thing. He never verbally stated it. And I think sometimes when it comes to finding people guilty, you actually do need that.
Right. And maybe, I mean, maybe you can be like, well, there's enough kind of circumstantial evidence, but that's the best you're going to get, is that it seems like this is what he wanted them to do. All right. Okay. We're going to spend today's episode, at least the majority of it, talking about last night's.
Hell yeah. The debates.
Or 2 nights ago. Democrat debate.
Before we do that, I'm shameless plug.
Oh yeah, of course. Go ahead.
Go onto YouTube. Just type in Detective Active. I put out a little short of a detective, and he solves crime by peeing on corpses. So go check that out,
guys. Go check out Rob's sketch. It's important that the part of the problem audience fucking rally behind Rob Bernstein, and go listen to Run Your Mouth podcast well. That's Rob's solo podcast. Really fucking funny. I love it, and I think you guys will too. So add that into your rotation. Go check out that sketch. Was it on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. No. The sketch, just type in Detective Active. My friend Gus posted on his channel.
Okay.
But you'll find it, no problem. Detective Active.
Sounds good. All right. So there was yet another one of these debates. Another one with 10 candidates. I guess at least we don't have to have two debates with 10 candidates. But it's still fucking a crowded field.
Yeah, they know how to keep it a snooze fest. Vote some people off the fucking island already. That's part of why it still just sucks, is they got too many fucking people.
It is. It was particularly brutal. And I mean, I watch all of these fucking debates, but this one was particularly brutal. There were a few interesting, I think it was like 2.5 hours or something in that ballpark. And there were a few interesting moments, but there's just so much nonsense and mush and and like, you know, there's a thing that I've noticed before, right, in doing cable news. And I never really, I guess maybe I did think of it, but until I started doing cable news shows, I never really like thought clearly about it, or really like precisely thought it through. But you will see these people all the time. Like, if just right now, turn on CNN, turn on MSNBC, turn on Fox News, whatever. And you'll watch, there's like people there, and you have like a minute to speak. You know, you get asked a question, you got like a minute. And there's people who just start using filler. Like, they basically just say nothing. It adds nothing. There's nothing that's like, wow, okay, that's an interesting point. Or, ooh, that's something, that's really something to think about. It's just kind of your same boring, typical, you've heard this 100 times already today, you know, line. And it's really kind of like, when you step back and look at it, you're like, why? I mean, Jesus Christ, you're telling me any one of these topics, you would think, I mean, look, we do usually an hour and a half for a podcast on Part of the Problem, sometimes a little bit shorter, between an hour and a half, sometimes a little bit longer, 3 times a week on this show, on a good week. But, you know, what we do on our schedule is, right, so it's 4.5 hours in every week. Every single week, that's what you put out, another 4.5 hours. So any topic that you have, I mean, whatever the question is, if it's about any pressing issue, you've got a minute, 1 minute. I mean, think about what that is, 1 minute to talk about it. You're telling me you don't have one compelling, interesting thing to say in a minute? Like, you won't throw one thing out there that's kind of like, wow, that's a fucking oof, that's something to really chew on. And there's these people who just fucking have nothing. Like, it's so often, I've been on so many of these panels where someone else is talking and you're just like, okay, I know where you're going already. Like, wrap it up. Can I just have your time? Because I'll spend it on something interesting. You know, like, there's so many interesting people out there. And in the podcast world, you know, there's so many fucking interesting people making YouTube videos, making podcasts, writing books. Like, how many books have you read? It's like, fuck, that was a fucking really thought-provoking, interesting thing. Some of it you might agree with, some of it you don't agree with, but it's like, holy shit, I learned something. I thought of things in a new way. Are these other people who want to lead the fucking country? They want to be the commander-in-chief, the head of the executive branch of the biggest government to ever exist. And so much waste. And there's these people who's like, you got like a few minutes in front of tens of millions of people, and you just give an answer that anyone else on stage would have given. I you know, it's like hard to even believe that it's real. And it almost makes you wonder. Sometimes I almost go to like a conspiratorial place where I really do think it's like, oh, this is like all a show. Why would you guys not try to separate yourself from the field a little bit? I think there's a lot of the candidates, like establishment candidates I'm talking about, who are basically just there and know they're not going to win. Know they're not going to, you know, be a part of it.
Oh, they're like, I'm the token black guy. I got to show the black community that we're sure. All a team here.
Yeah, but enough about Cory Booker. But I think there's something where it's almost like you have to create this illusion of choice. You have to help create the idea that people picked the winner, that this wasn't just who we gave you. You know what I mean? Like that you know, you had a say in this, you know? And then I do think there are sometimes like Trump being nominated where it's like, oh, that you weren't supposed to pick that guy. That guy wasn't supposed to be in like that. You know what I mean? But anyway. All right. So Big, you watched the debate, or you got through most of it?
Not even.
you got through some of it.
I'm going to say I listened to about an hour of it, but it was the most boring of all the debates so far. Firstly, there was too much of the, okay, great question. I'm going to take this opportunity just to talk about why we need to defeat Trump. How about we just remove that? I think we all understand.
Everyone up here doesn't like Donald Trump.
But not just that. The whole point of this is that you're going to run against him.
Yes.
So yeah. I get it. You guys are playing a game where you're going to beat that guy. I don't need to understand the rules of the game. That's been established. Good.
And then the other thing they do is that they'll say, and we can't just talk about Trump. And then they talk about Trump a whole lot more.
So that's boring as all hell. I don't think the women moderators added a lot of flavor to it.
Yeah, they were. They
you would
were
think
all
usually
female, huh?
Women know how to pick a fight and stir up drama, but none of that. You know, I guess the men kind of know how to divide these people and ask more questions.
So after the debate, I watched like a little bit of the MSNBC post-debate coverage, and Brian Williams is the guy who runs it now. Of course, Brian Williams, for people who know, was NBC's head anchor. He was the number one television newsman in America until he got caught fucking making up a bunch of lies for no reason other than to just fucking, you know, brag about how brave he was in these crazy situations he's been in. They were all fucking lies. And he got fired from NBC and moved over to MSNBC later. And now
they're,
this is what he does.
They're cooler with lying over there. They're like, well, MSNBC.
They're like, that's pretty much par for the course over at MSNBC. So he goes over there, and the first thing he says, and it was like everything I hate about the mainstream media and everything I hate about, like, leftist, not even leftist, but just like your average left-leaning fucking, like, person, the left-leaning zeitgeist, like everything I hate about it, is the first thing he says. They go to him and he goes, I just want to say what a wonderful job the moderators did tonight. I mean, I thought they were just amazing, and I'd be perfectly happy if they were basically just the moderators for every debate from here on out. You're just like, fuck you, man, you fucking spineless suck up. Like, it's one thing to be like, hey, yeah, you can have four female moderators, no problem, and I'm not going to treat them any different than guys. But you would never say that about any fucking dudes who are moderating. And then it's like you're just sucking up to women. Like, oh, look, you know, it's this fucking bullshit white knighting, like fucking virtue signaling nonsense. Oh, man, I just think the chicks are so great. I think they're even better than any dudes could do. And then you're like, why? There were maybe two interesting questions that were asked the entire night. Like, the entire night, maybe two or three, that you were like, oh, that was kind of a good question. I thought of a couple that were like, oh, that was, I actually liked that question. And the rest is just this filler bullshit nonsense. Anyway.
And you had a bunch of people there. You're like, why are you still here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At some point, like in MMA, when guys lost too many in a row, I don't want to see him fight anymore. The guy's a loser. Like, I want to see the best in the sport. Go at it. You don't have a chance in this thing. Get out of here.
Well, it's like there's some people who are like almost legend, like in the MMA analogy, right? There are some people who are like legends. And then you're kind of like, oh, well, I almost want to see you can fight other like interesting fights. Some people are just really exciting fighters. But then there are some guys who are just like a wrestler who just fucking got beat like several times. And you're like, well, you're not going to be the champ. You don't really get into interesting, you know, like fun fights to watch. It's like, eh, what's the point? Okay. So my big takeaway from the debate was a lot of that, which is always kind of the big takeaway, that it's unbelievable. It really is. And even though I've said these things a lot in the past and we all kind of know this, it never stops amazing me that you're like, wow, we really are in a world where you have a 2.5 hour debate amongst these guys who are running for president. And it's so dumb. It's so dumb. And then you could just like read some book by some fucking random author who has no part in any of this and be like, that was fucking brilliant. That was the most mind-blowing shit. And this is really part of the flaw of democracy, is that they've just got to play to a whole bunch of people who don't know any better. And I don't mean, I'm not shitting on the people. They've got fucking, they got a life to live. They got a family to raise. They got friends. They got work. They got a lot of other things. But like, God damn, is it all, it's like 99%
also
boring. And dumb.
They've kind of over-debated that to watch them do the same boring thing twice was okay, but it's like the fifth time I'm watching them, sixth time.
Yeah, it's hard. And it seems for the most part there's nothing new or interesting. All right, so here's what I was thinking we'd do. We'd kind of go through the candidates and how we felt they did, go through the moments that we thought were the biggest moments and the key takeaways from the debate. So the only one who I'm going to play video clips from is Tulsi, where there's a YouTube clip up of her entire debate performance. I thought we'd go through that. Obviously, as I've said before, Tulsi, to me, she's my favorite of the field. She's the most interesting of the field. And the obvious reason is, as Scott Horton said recently, I thought it was the best way to put it, is that she's just, he was like, why do like libertarians and you know, the articles that are like right-wingers like Tulsi Gabbard or whatever. It's like, well, the only reason any of us like Tulsi Gabbard is because she's the least bad on the most important issue. And that's really it. It's like, okay, and that's enough. The state of things is so bleak that that's enough to get you kind of like, oh, okay. Well, she's actually saying we shouldn't spend trillions of dollars murdering people and destroying nations and getting, you know, our fucking young men killed and have their fucking, you know, become amputees. Like, maybe it's not a great strategy for a society to fucking, you know, like, at first it's like, maybe it's immoral to fucking slaughter millions of people, of innocent people. And then maybe it's not a great strategy for a nation to spend themselves, you know, trillions of dollars into debt to get your most, like, fucking, you know, your, like, strongest, most physically capable young men and turn them into amputees. Maybe this isn't a great strategy. Maybe this isn't the way to go. And she's the one person who kind of hints at that at least a little bit. So I would say, overall, like, I'd give Tulsi Gabbard like a C, maybe a C plus for her debate performance this time. I really do. I like Tulsi Gabbard. I want her to do well. I sent her campaign money twice because I want there to be somebody talking to the left half of America, like, telling them that the wars should be an issue. This is something we should talk about. And leading, it's so great that she leads with the most important issue and is pretty much on the right side, or at least, as Scott Horton said, the least worst on that issue.
But even she, I don't know, there's something about her for a pretty lady talking about the most important issue. She's somehow also making it a little, she's falling a little flat.
Yes.
It almost feels like I've had those comedy sets, you're phoning it a little bit and you listen back to it and you're like, I just wasn't selling it. That's what it feels like with her.
I think that, so I was talking to my wife about this the other night as we were watching it, and I was like, man, she's just not good at these things.
Yeah.
Like, she's just not good at these debates. She doesn't say something that grabs you and makes you go like, holy shit, that's a good point. And she's got such a good point. And my wife, Lauren, was like, she was like, well, what do you want her to do? You want her to, like, yell and curse like you do? And yeah, like, I get what she's saying, but I was like, no, that would be a bad idea. That I should not be the person running for president, because, yes, that is not going to be the best way.
But she could show us her tits.
But she could blow a titty. No, but, like, you know, but you could, you got to have something, yeah, like a little bit of passion. I mean, like, Ron Paul was the most gentlemanly person in the world, but he would say something that makes you go like, oh, fuck. That would, I remember one time Ron Paul said, and there's so many clips of him in the debate, but he said one time, they go, the question was something vague. I'm almost going to get this right completely. But the question was something vague. Like, they go, so they were like, Ron Paul, you oppose these wars. You know, you're to the left of Obama on fighting these wars, yet you're seeking the nomination of the Republican Party. Are you out of step with the party? Are you seeking the nomination of the wrong party? And he just responds and he goes, well, you know, and they said something about him being unelectable because he was so far to the left, quote, the left on the war issue. Because this was 2008, you got to remember, you know, George W. Bush years. So, and he goes, well, I mean, you know, we haven't even had one primary yet. This is only like our third debate, so I think it's a little premature for the media to dictate who the candidate's going to be. And then that kind of got an applause. Like, just that right away, you're like, oh, yeah, this is the media telling you who's electable and unelectable. And he goes, well, if you think about it, if you measured everything I've ever said, everything I've ever written, every vote I've ever casted against the Constitution, I'm a strict constitutionalist. So you're saying the Republican Party doesn't want me because I actually believe in the Constitution? And he goes, I'm the most conservative member up here. I voted against more spending and waste in government than anyone on this stage. And then that kind of gets an applause because they're kind of like, well, yeah, we're supposed to be for that, right? And he goes, look, so why should I not be a Republican? Because I talk about a non-interventionist foreign policy? You know, that was the advice of the founders. And then he goes, and I'll never forget this moment. He goes, let me see if I can get this straight. So we need to borrow $10 billion from China, who's a communist government. They steal this money from their people. So we borrow $10 billion from China. Then we give it to Musharraf, who's a military dictator who overthrew an elected government. And then we go to war. We lose all these lives, spend all this money promoting democracy in Iraq. So what's going on here? And it got like a big applause. And it's just that simple. He goes, wait, what is this whole thing? And if you listen to that, you're like, holy shit. You know, that's like a great way. Now, Ron Paul was not the most charismatic, well-spoken. He's not like Obama. You're not like, man, that guy can just like charm the pants off anyone. He's just like a country doctor who's telling the truth. But he just goes, wait a minute. So you're telling me we can take money from a communist country to fucking support a military dictator who overthrew a democratically elected leader, and then we go to war, supposedly promoting democracy? What is this whole thing? And then I'm not conservative because I speak like just little things like that where you kind of go like, wow, that's a fucking powerful thing to say. Now, he wasn't screaming or cursing at anybody. You don't have to do it my way. Sure, I would scream. I'd be like, you're all a bunch of fucking war criminals. But that probably wouldn't be effective. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to do something. And this is the thing that Tulsi Gabbard needs to realize that I think she doesn't enough. It's like she does this thing where she's very calm, collected, and like, I want to show you that I can be a leader and I'm a serious person. And okay, fine, if that's your style. But you got to like fucking, you know, sit down and fucking write this out. Like think of a few really power. What's the most powerful, you know, point? What's the most powerful 10 points? Look, like I was saying before with the podcast, we do 4.5 hours a week. You have a minute on TV. You should be able to talk about this for 5 hours, right? So you whittle that down to 8 minutes. This is going to be your, and that this is the formula that I figured out. This is like what people say I'm really good on those cable news shows. That was my humble brag. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people say I'm fantastic at this. But it's like, well, come on, man. I mean, if I can talk about this shit for hours and hours and hours, then why, if I'm whittling it down to my top 30 seconds, that's going to be a really great 30 seconds just inherently, right? All right. So let's get into Tulsi Gabbard. I thought she had some okay moments. Just wasn't quite what it needed to be, but whatever. Let's go through and break this down. And by the way, let me say before we do this, I'm not just doing this for the sake of Tulsi Gabbard. It's for me, for you, Rob, for all of us to learn from that. If you want to fucking do one of these things, and if you want to communicate the message of being against these wars or whatever the good parts of Tulsi Gabbard's campaign are, it's like, let's all learn together and think together about what it is, what you need to do with a limited amount of time to really like be compelling and convey, you know, that you're different and things like that. So here, let's play Tulsi Gabbard's start it.
You have criticized Hillary Clinton as the, quote, personification of the rot that has sickened the Democratic Party. What is the rot you see in the Democratic Party?
Let's pause it right there for a second. So this is the first question that Tulsi Gabbard got. Now, if you are a Tulsi Gabbard supporter, you've got to be like, yes. Could there be a better question that you could be asked than that? And by the way, if she was not prepared to be asked about that question, that is like criminal negligence. Not literally, but you know what I mean? Like you called out you had a fucking public feud with the last Democratic nominee and you called her all of these fucking names.
And you think these ladies could stick together?
Yeah, that's right. Come on.
Team woman.
Hang out a little
empowerment.
Bit. Start synchronizing your cycles or whatever. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to have something ready for this moment that's just a fucking, like, that is a big, juicy fucking fastball right down the middle of the plate that you got to be ready to just crank out of the park. If you can't knock this one out of the park, what are we doing here, you know? So this is her question. Now let's play her answer.
That our Democratic Party, unfortunately, is not the party that is of, by, and for the people. It is a party that has been and continues to be influenced by the foreign policy establishment in Washington, represented by Hillary Clinton and others' foreign policy, by the military-industrial complex and other greedy corporate interests. I'm running for president to be the Democratic nominee that rebuilds our Democratic Party, takes it out of their hands, and truly puts it in the hands of the people of this country, a party that actually hears the voices of Americans who are struggling all across this country and puts it in the hands of veterans and fellow Americans who are calling for an end to this ongoing Bush-Clinton-Trump foreign policy doctrine of regime change wars, overthrowing dictators in other countries, needlessly sending my brothers and sisters in uniform into harm's way to fight in wars that actually undermine our national security and have cost us thousands of American lives.
It's unfortunate that we have someone.
All right, so that was her first answer. I give it a C, First answer, I give a C. Now, the best part of that answer, I thought, was obviously that I loved the one line that sang the Clinton-Bush-Trump foreign policy. That is a great way to phrase it. Excellent job on that, okay? That's really excellent to let people know that it's kind of like, hey, this foreign policy is owned by Clinton, Bush, Trump, all of them. They're all a part of this same foreign policy establishment. They've all continued it. I think that was fucking excellent. The problem is you're asked a listen, this is a very pointed, serious question. You're running for the Democratic nomination. You're saying the last Democratic nominee was the queen of warmongers. Like, holy shit, what? You don't hear this very often. Back that up. And then she goes, you know, this whole thing of like for, of, and by the people instead of the greedy corporations. I want to put the government back in the hands of the veterans and the people who are hurting across this country. These are wasted words, man. Just waste. And you have no words to waste. What does this mean? This doesn't mean anything. Anyone else on the campaign could say that. Hey, does anybody disagree that we need to be a government of, for, and by the people? Does anyone disagree that we should have the government in the hands of the people instead of the greedy corporations? Oh, it's like, what? How does this separate you? Look, man, you're at like 2-3%. You're going to get 6 to 8 minutes on this debate stage tonight. You got to maximize every as they just asked you why you called Hillary Clinton a warmonger. Okay, so here's the answer. Well, Hillary Clinton called me a Russian asset, which is ridiculous. I called her a warmonger, which she is. Can any of you tell me one war that Hillary Clinton opposed? Hillary Clinton championed the war in Libya. She destroyed that nation. She's got millions of deaths on her hands. She championed the war in Iraq. She champions every last war. And what have they done? I've watched too many of my fellow soldiers bleed and die and lose their lives and come back and commit suicide to support somebody who believes in that. Is that the Democratic Party position? Do we support? Are we pro-war? Do we support endless wars, the longest wars in American history? By the way, this is all off the top of my head, but you got to have something there that hits like a knife through a sheet, or a better analogy. But you know what I mean? Like, you just got to in some way attack and like really, really drive your point home. It's very obvious. Like, I don't know. This is easy. And this is like, there's far better people than me to come up with this shit. But you got to have something prepared for that. I mean, I don't understand how you wouldn't think there's no way we're not going to get a question about the Hillary Clinton feud, right? So just have something ready. And if you're going off of government for, of, and by the people, this is like nothing here separates you. I'm for unity, not division. You know, it's like, what? Okay, great. This is just emptiness, and you don't have time for that. You know, it'd be one thing if you're like in the first three, you know, if you're in first, second, or third place and you're like, I'm playing it safe, but you got to go for it right now. And for Tulsi, it's like, it should be easy to go for it because you've got this great thing. You've got this fucking great thing, Tulsi Gabbard. You're better on the most important issue. You're different than everyone else on stage, and it's a winning issue. It's the issue that people fucking care about. Do you think how many people were there who fucking, you know, when Hillary Clinton lost to Barack Obama, do you think there were a lot of people who were like, well, I'm going with Hillary Clinton because she supported that war in Iraq? It's like, no, that fucking hurt her. That was a fucking like weight around her fucking neck that she had to carry that thing. When Bernie Sanders, you know, was like, well, he's less of a war hawk than Hillary Clinton. Do you think there were a lot of Democrats who were like, I like the war hawk? No, these fucking left-leaning people are supposed to be anti-war, and they can be if they're just convinced. And by the way, you've got them. Like, it's such an easy issue to fucking bang against the left wing of this country. Hey, these are poor brown people who are murdered. Do we not care about that? Of course we do. So you've got this huge issue that you're different from everybody else on the stage on. And you're down at like 2-3% in the polls and you get a few minutes. So obviously use that fucking issue. Use it. And it can't, and you just, it can't just be as matter of fact and kind of, it's almost like she's just reading the weather. You know what I mean? Like, you got to have a little bit behind it. All right. So that was, by the way, I will say though, I love the fucking, however she said it, the Clinton-Bush-Trump foreign policy. I thought that was really strong. Okay, so the next thing that happens is then she gets called out by Kamala Harris, who is still salty that she ruined her fucking campaign a few debates ago. So that's the next clip.
Of American lives. It's unfortunate that we have someone on the stage who is attempting to be the Democratic nominee for President of the United States, who during the Obama administration spent 4 years full time on Fox News criticizing President Obama.
Who has spent full time criticizing
people on this stage as affiliated with the Democratic Party. When Donald Trump was elected, not even sworn in, buddied up to Steve Bannon to get a meeting with Donald Trump in the Trump Tower, fails to call a war criminal by what he is as a war criminal, and then spends full time during the course of this campaign, again, criticizing the Democratic Party.
Congresswoman Gabbard, I'll give you a chance to respond.
What Senator Harris is doing is unfortunately continuing to traffic in lies and smears and innuendos because she cannot challenge the substance of the argument that I'm making, the leadership and the change that I'm seeking to bring in our foreign policy, which only makes me guess that she will, as president, continue the status quo, continue the Bush, Clinton, Trump foreign policy of regime change wars, which is deeply destructive. This is personal to me because I served in Iraq. I left my seat in the state legislature in Hawaii, volunteered to deploy to Iraq, where I served in a medical unit where every single day I saw the terribly high human cost of war. I take very seriously the responsibility that the president has to serve as commander in chief, to lead our armed forces, and to make sure always, no, I'm not going to put party interests first. We have Democrats, Republicans, libertarians, and independents coming together saying, hey, we are all concerned about making sure that we have clean water to drink for our families, that we have clean air to breathe, that we're able to raise our kids.
Pause it right here.
Is this a new moment?
No, this was that. Huh?
Was that like a new?
Yeah, it was a new. I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I probably should have paused it earlier.
Did I take drugs? What just happened?
So her response to Kamala Harris, I'd give her like a B for that. You know, I thought it was decent. It's still just, you know, she's just not really built for these debates, which is unfortunate because the debates are what it's all about, especially when you're, you know, you got tens of millions of people with their eyes on you. You got to treat that with the respect it deserves. Like, it's got to be punched up. But decent, a decent response to what Kamala Harris said. You know, I would say that there has to be something. You know, if she's going to say her critique of you is that you spent all this time on Fox News and you tried to talk to Donald Trump and you did all of this stuff and you criticized Democrats and you refused to call out a war criminal and all of this stuff, you have to, you know, there has to be a certain amount of passion and precision where you start with and you go, listen, the issue that I care about more than any other issue is making sure that we don't get into another stupid war where millions of people die and I have to hold somebody's head in their lap. I mean, she was in a medical unit in Iraq in the worst of the fighting. She can literally say, like, I don't have to watch another person bleed to death as they cry for their parents. You know what I mean? Like, she can really make it personal in some way. Be like, that's what I care about. And if that means talking to Donald Trump or talking to Fox News audiences or talking to Bashar al-Assad, or talking to anyone I have to try to, dear God, not let us get into the eighth stupid war that we've been in the last 20 years, then that's what I'm going to go do. I will talk to anybody who is willing to listen to me when I say we need to stop fighting wars for no reason. Something like that. It's kind of just bite a little bit more. But, you know, that was decent. I would give it like a B, maybe even a B plus. It was fine. You know, just I still think there was more of an opportunity to like destroy Kamala Harris. But anyway, let's keep playing to her next thing.
It's in a community that's safe. It is the hyper-partisanship in Washington, unfortunately, that has created this gridlock that has stood in the way of the kinds of progress that I would bring about as president. It's important that we set the record straight and correct the racial injustices that exist in a very institutional way in our country, beginning with things that have to do with our criminal justice system, where predominantly the failed war on drugs that has been continuing to be waged in this country has disproportionately disproportionately impacted people of color and people in poverty. This is something that I'll do as president and commander in chief, is to overhaul our criminal justice system, working in a bipartisan way to do things like end the failed war on drugs. But I want to get back to Pete Buttigieg and his comment about experience. Pete, you'll agree that the service that we both have provided to our country as veterans by itself does not qualify us to serve as commander-in-chief. I think the most recent example of your inexperience in national security and foreign policy came from your recent careless statement about how you as president would be willing to send our troops to Mexico to fight the cartels. As commander-in-chief, leader of our armed forces, I bring extensive experience serving for 7 years in Congress, on the Foreign Affairs Committee, on the Armed Services Committee, on the Homeland Security Committee, meeting with leaders of countries around the world, working with military commanders of different commands, dealing with high-level national security briefings, understanding what's necessary, the preparation that I've gotten to walk in on day one to serve as Commander-in-Chief.
Congresswoman, thank you. Mr. Mayor, I'll allow you to respond.
I know that it's par for the course in Washington to take remarks out of context, but that is outlandish, even by the standards of today's politics.
Are you saying that you didn't say that?
I was talking about U.S.-Mexico cooperation. We've been doing security cooperation with Mexico for years, with law enforcement cooperation and a military relationship that could continue to be developed with training relationships, for example. Do you seriously think anybody on this stage is proposing invading Mexico?
That's not what I said. I'm talking about building up alliances.
And if your question is about experience, let's also talk about judgment. One of the foreign leaders you mentioned meeting was Bashar al-Assad. I have, in my experience, such as it is, whether you think it counts or not, since it wasn't accumulated in Washington, enough judgment that I would not have sat down with a murderous dictator like that.
Congresswoman Gabbard, let me allow you to respond. You were asked directly whether you would send our troops to Mexico to fight cartels, and your answer was yes. The fact checkers can check this out. No. But your point about judgment is absolutely correct. Our commander-in-chief does need to have good judgment. And what you've just pointed out is that you would lack the courage to meet with both adversaries and friends to ensure the peace and national security of our nation. I take the example of those leaders who have come before us, leaders like JFK, who met with Khrushchev, like Roosevelt, who met with Stalin,
like Reagan, who met
and worked with Gorbachev. These issues of national security are incredibly important. I will meet with and do what is necessary to make sure that no more of our brothers and sisters in uniform are needlessly sent into harm's way fighting regime change wars that undermine our national security. I'll bring real leadership and experience to the White House.
So I'd give her like a B for that answer. I mean, not bad. The problem is that she's just allowing butt stuff to get these big pops and not hitting them quite hard enough. That's the difference between being a B and an A in that type of answer. Now, I think that, you know, look, maybe it's a little bit of a risky type of response to say, but I really do think when you're at 2-3% and you got to go for it. Like, why not? Especially if you are what Tulsi Gabbard says she is, like you're running against this whole establishment. If you're going like, hey, this was a party that last time nominated the queen warmonger, then okay, then we got to fucking go for it and try to take it away from them. So if they're going to throw this thing again, you got to be prepared for this. You have to be ready. So but I love that she brought up the history of Kennedy meeting with Khrushchev and all of that stuff, because, yeah, by the way, that's like the best thing he fucking did. Like, dear God, like, let's meet with these other people who like are it rather than fight a war with them. But I think maybe if you're accused of, you know, oh, my God, you met with Bashar al-Assad. Maybe the answer to that has to be like, yeah, Bashar al-Assad is a bad guy. I'm not a fan of, you know, dictators. That being said, if someone could have met with Saddam Hussein in 2002 and averted that disastrous war, wouldn't have that been a good thing? Does it matter that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy? Maybe someone could have met with him and we could have talked this out and we could have avoided a million Iraqis being dead, trillions of dollars being spent in the thousands of, you know, American soldiers who were killed. Maybe we wouldn't have so many soldiers committing suicide every single day because of that nightmare. You know? Like, maybe that's the angle you got to take. Maybe you got to go a little bit stronger and really hit him. And the fucking Buttigieg thing. Oh, my God. That it's like, this is like, this is how stupid the fucking, you know, politics in general and the Democratic base is that she's naming all these moments. You know, what did she name? Kennedy and maybe Nixon meeting with Mao and FDR meeting with Stalin. And he goes, yeah, and Trump met with fucking Kim Jong-un. And they're like, bah, yeah, Trump bad. So funny. Like, listen, maybe this is just too ballsy and maybe you don't want to take this risk, but I feel like you're down in low single digit, you know, poll numbers. Take the fucking risk. Be like, yeah, it's one of the few good things Donald Trump did. Yeah, you know what? Okay, you guys can, I know Donald Trump's a bad guy. You guys can all boo. He got like 4 hostages back. Do you guys not want those 4 American hostages back that he saved, the lives that he saved from there? Yeah, Donald Trump's done a lot of bad things. He should be prosecuted for war crimes, but that was pretty cool that he brought an official end to the Korean Civil War, whatever, the Korean War. You know, something. Say it a little bit better than that. But yeah, I mean, okay. So Mayor Pete Buttstuff is going to say that the one good thing, you know, one of the few good things that Donald Trump did was such a disaster. Oh, how terrible. He met with Kim Jong-un. Yeah. Okay. What's bad about it? Are the people of North Korea being any more or less oppressed since before he met with them? Oh, no, but we have 4 hostages back. Okay. Seems like a pretty good deal. We're at least talking with them. All right. Doesn't seem so bad to me. It's like, yeah, we'll meet with people. Now, I understand, by the way, I'm not crazy. Like, I know you can't go into, like, Bashar al-Assad, you know. You know, because if I'm just being completely honest, I'd be like, is he really a war criminal? Is he more of a war criminal than, you know, George W. Bush was a war criminal? I don't know. I'm still waiting for some evidence that he gassed his people. But, you know, you probably shouldn't go that route because that could, you know, be more of a cost than a benefit. But I again, it was fine. It was a fine answer, you know, but you'd rather see a more dominant victory on that end. All right, let's play it. We're coming up at the end of Tulsi Gabbard. I think this is her final statement now.
My personal commitment to you, to all of my fellow Americans, is to treat you with respect and compassion, something that we in Hawaii call aloha. Every single person deserves to be treated with respect, regardless of race, religion, or gender, or even your politics. Inclusion, unity, respect, aloha, these will be the operating principles for my administration. Now, Dr. Martin Luther King visited Hawaii first back in 1959, where he expressed his appreciation for what we call the aloha spirit. He said, "We look to you for inspiration as a bold example for what you have already succeeded in the areas of racial harmony and racial justice where we are still struggling to achieve in other sections of the country." He later went on to say, as I looked out at the various faces in various colors mingled together like the waters of the sea, I see only one face, the face of the future. Working side by side, let's defeat the divisiveness of Donald Trump. Come together and usher in a 21st century of racial harmony, of racial justice, peace, inclusion, and true equality. Working side by side, let's make Dr. King's dream our reality.
Thank you, Congresswoman.
Yeah, all right. I mean,
we're just going to aloha, bro.
I mean, F. I'd give her an F for her closing statement. F might be too high of a mark.
It's like she's...
Like, is there anything below... Is an F minus a thing? I was never a good student, but I don't think I ever got an F minus.
I was like...
But if that is a thing, it's terrible. And here's why. Listen, it's not a bad thing to say. It, like, sounded kind of nice. If you're giving an hour speech, that's not a bad, you know, terrible thing to throw in. It's just, like, kind of fluff and sounds nice and inclusion and racial harmony and dignity of everybody. Wasn't MLK a good guy? But holy shit, that is not the moment that you're in right now. You're in a moment where you're in low single-digit percentages and you're trying to win. And you got a minute in front of tens of millions of people to make your fucking pitch. And she said nothing. She said nothing the whole fucking time. I mean, literally nothing. Who disagrees with anything you just said right there? That could have come out of anyone's mouth. It could have. I mean, that's just terrible. Terrible.
Sounded like Tommy Chong wrote that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
like a bong rip in the 70s. Just, hey, man, we're going to like get along, man.
Everything,
and
respect and love. And man, listen.
You going to give out luau's? That's her foreign policy. She's got, I'm just going to go to other countries.
You got to.
I'm going to put luau's on those people. And they're
I can't believe that you can't even outsource this job. Look, this is the one thing you know going into a debate. You know you're going to get your closing. Sometimes they give you an opening and a closing, but in this one they just gave you a closing. But you're going to at least get your closing where you get a minute or whatever that was to say what you're going to say. You got like 8 minutes total.
Island vibes, bro.
Yeah, I mean, look, you got to be able to outsource this to like one good writer who can come up with something. Look, here's, and again, I don't prepare any of these fucking things. I bet if I sat down for a fucking a week, I could come up with something like really good for this. But if you're Tulsi Gabbard, it's like, I don't know. How about something like, look, a lot of people on stage are saying things that are exactly the same as what the next person's saying. I am someone different in this race. And the difference between me and the rest of these people on this stage is that I am serious about ending the longest wars in American history. They have done nothing but cost us trillions of dollars, slaughter hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. I've watched the cost of this in real time, and it is time that we end this. Hey, Democrats, are we the anti-war party or not? You know, like, I mean, it's so easy to say. So how about she says something like, look at the way everybody else talks to each other. Who's been smeared more than me on this stage? I've been called a Russian asset, a Russian spy. I've been attacked by some of these Democrats up here on stage with me. I didn't realize I was running against Senator Joseph McCarthy. Really? I'm a Russian? Am I now, or have I ever been a member of the Communist Party? Is that how you're treating me? Well, why is it? Why is it that I'm getting this treatment and no one else here? Why is it that no one would talk to Elizabeth Warren nobody would talk to Amy Klobuchar or Kamala Harris or Joe Biden like this? Why are they talking to me like this? What's different about me? One thing and one thing only. I stand against the military-industrial complex. I stand against these endless wars where these big weapons companies make money, where these shadowy deep state CIA agents lie us into these wars. They all get rich and my brothers and sisters die. That's the only reason why I'm under this attack, because I actually, in a serious way, oppose these wars. If you want to end these wars, if the Democrats want to be the anti-war party, come with me. You know, I mean, something. Again, I am spitballing this right now. You can do something. You got a minute, man. You got a minute in front of fucking tens of millions of people. Go for it.
Nah, man, we're going to give a ticket to everyone in the country so that they can go to Hawaii and they can feel the good vibes and then everyone will get along.
But isn't that just so, you know, it's just so bad. And it's not that it wasn't like, it's just understanding the moment and the position and the time constraints that you're in. Because it wasn't a terrible thing to say at the end of an hour-long speech.
I can be anywhere, and if they tell me I just got to have a little more aloha in my life, I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you and your stupid fucking alohas.
By the way, I wouldn't object, and in all seriousness, I wouldn't object to that at the end of an inauguration speech. Like, let's say she won the presidency and she's getting sworn in and she goes, listen, what I want is to treat every person with dignity. I want to live Martin Luther King's dream. I care everybody, no matter your race or your, you know, gender or sexual orientation or whatever your political views are, whatever your views are, you deserve respect. Like, yeah, that's like a nice thing for once you've won to say. But holy shit, you haven't won anything. And you have this issue that you're so good on. Gotta do better than that, Tulsi.
Also, I read Bill Kreutzmann's book. He was the drummer for the Grateful Dead. Real cool dude. Moves down to Hawaii. He's got $50 million. He's as cool as they come, dude. Retired. Well, he plays occasionally. Now he's back in the band, but that's a pretty cool guy. You'd feel
the Grateful Dead still play?
They're out with John Mayer as
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know what I forgot what they call themselves now. But yeah, he's been out there. He's out there with Billy and the kids. That guy, he's out there. He's playing the drums. He's great. He moves down there. He's rich as fuck. He's got himself a nice-ass boat. And he said that the people of Hawaii did not like him because Hawaiians don't like people from the mainland. They're actually very, I think, exogenous. They don't like, they're like, this is our island. They're very into like the Hawaiian race or whatever the fuck they are. I don't know what their race is because I just see people as people. That's the way I view them. I don't care what the color of your skin is. I don't care what kind of vagina you came out of. You're part of the human race. I'll be I'll be in this race with you.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, I'm sure there is something to that. And that's the norm around the world in general. But I just can't get past, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, come on. That's just, you can't just waste your closing statement like that.
I think maybe the rest of the country really picked up on the Aloha spirit. Yeah, it just went over. We're the cynics. Everyone else was at home. They watched a whole boring debate. And when she just started talking about bringing the Alohas to everyone, they're like, I think this lady's onto something.
All right.
I need more Alohas in my life.
Let's go through, you know, the other candidates in the debate. I'm not going to play any of their clips. None of them were particularly worth it to me. But so let's go through, you know, how we thought everybody did in the debate. So let's go through Joe Biden, number one. Man, is he bad at these things. Oh my God. I couldn't believe it. I mean, okay, so Joe Biden, every time I see him, I can't believe how old he looks. Like, he's like an old man. He looks like your like grandpa who you're visiting in an old age home. I mean, it's just really, really old. And he, I mean, I'm pretty sure. Listen, if I'm wrong about this, someone send me the clip. But I don't think there was one answer to one question that Joe Biden got where he didn't stutter, stumble, and fumble through the answer. I don't think there was one. Right away, his first one, he stumbled through. Like, and everyone after that, he's constantly just correcting himself, getting things wrong. And it's really weird. Like, you're like, wow, dude, I just don't think you're up to this. I thought he had a very bad night. I don't know. What did you think of what you saw of him?
It's too much of the, hey, I'm the only person who can beat Trump. I mean, that's certainly not true. He never says anything of substance. And like you said, even when he's talking, there's nothing convincing being said.
Yeah. But I really
stutter,
was...
bumble, and fumble is good. It's like snap, crackle, and pop.
Yes.
That's what he eats for breakfast.
Stutter, bumble, and fumble. But that is what it seemed like to me. Like, every single answer, he was struggling to kind of keep it together. And it seems like, you know, like, I think we've talked about this before, but you know how, if you know anybody in that age range, like late 70s, there's something where there are some people in who are, whatever he is, 78, 79, something like that, there are some people who are basically as sharp as they've ever been at that age, and there are some people who are like old at that age, and he seems to be the type who's just lost a step or two. And I think he was never that clever to begin with, but
I think he just can't sniff kids anymore. It really throws him off his game.
That's
if this was
needs.
Like yeah if
it's
this
like
was
Nancy
20...
Pelosi drinking fetus blood, yeah, like he just needs it.
If this was 20 years ago and he could still go out on the reg, sniff some kids, he'd be nice, cool, calm, collected, and sharp, but you're not giving him his juice.
Yeah, you know, it's quite possible that's what it is. Anyway, there was one question, I'm trying to think of Joe Biden moments, but there was one question that was asked of him that I thought was one of the best questions of the night. And of course, he just dodged it and didn't respond to it at all. But I believe it was Rachel Maddow who said to him, said, hey, you're talking about how after Trump, you're the guy who can bring Democrats and Republicans together. But, you know, like a majority of the Republicans in the Senate right now are saying that they should investigate you and your son, Hunter Biden, and your dealings in Ukraine. So how are you going to work with people who think you should be investigated for corruption? And he just didn't respond. He just danced around it the whole time. And it's interesting that no one else on stage, none of the other Democrats, have the balls to call out the Joe Hunter Biden Ukraine thing. And I think it's because you'd have to go so against the party and what they're trying to do right now. But you would think, like, maybe
it's also, they don't want to run against Trump. I think they're all rooting for impeachments. That cuts it down.
Right. I guess so. They're all trying to get Donald Trump impeached, I suppose. But you would think, like, some of these guys, yeah, maybe you want to take a shot. Maybe you want to take a shot at Biden, who is still, believe it or not, the front runner nationally. And, you know, you would think that that might, I don't know, be something. So there was that. I'm trying to think, was there any other Biden moment? I thought there was one other moment of his that that I thought was interesting. All right, maybe I'll remember it later, and I'll come back to it if I do. Okay, other candidates who were there. Elizabeth Warren. Maybe I'll try to go in order of the polling or whatever. Elizabeth Warren, I still thought was just bad, like she always is. However, it was pretty clear the all-female MSNBC panel, they went a lot easier on her than they have in previous debates. I mean, look, Elizabeth Warren, by the way, I didn't even know this till I was reading about it 2 days ago. Elizabeth Warren changed her healthcare plan. She came out with this $52 trillion plan. She changed it because it was getting so much fucking heat. There was so much backlash. And then she changed it to like a thing where you phase in over 3 years. So it only cost us like $35 trillion over the first 10 years or something, which is still crazy. But
wait, I thought she worked out all the details.
Well, right.
She's been studying this her entire life.
Woman with a plan all of a sudden changed the plan. And she didn't get a question about that. She didn't get a question about like, well, why is it that you had to change this healthcare plan? What was the problem with the original? Nothing. I mean, they just gave, you know, kid gloves with her. Of course, she won't get a question about, you know, the Native American thing. She won't get a question about like anything difficult. And she got more time, I think, than anybody else at this debate. But she's just not good. Like, she's not good at these debates.
So are there days that you feel more like an Indian than others? Because she knows what she's inside.
I wish you were the moderator of these debates. Believe me, it would be a lot more fun. It would be a lot more fun. I don't know. I didn't really have any other big takeaway from Elizabeth Warren. She kind of comes off like a scold and like a there's just nothing charismatic about her.
That's exactly the missed thing. I would think healthcare's probably the biggest issue other than, hey, let's beat Trump. And I already said the rules of the game is you're going up against Trump. You don't really have to talk about that.
Yeah.
So healthcare's the biggest one. She just made the biggest blunder on what's probably their biggest issue. How is that not kind of the starting point? How is that not something that you really get into?
Yeah.
I mean, you got the people here to debate it. So why isn't that the thing that we're debating?
Yeah. And they also, nobody asked her again about how this is going to, you know, the taxes going up and all. I mean, they allow her to go off on this. She you know, she continues to go off with the 2-cent plan thing, the wealth tax. Now, there's so many things about the wealth tax.
There was a Wall Street Journal article. I couldn't follow the math. I'm telling you straight up, I could not follow the math, but they looked at her latest tax plan, and for certain wealthy individuals, it actually totals to 158%. Now, what I couldn't follow was they were saying if you make 60, you end up paying the government 55. I don't get how that works out to 158. You can go find the article. But the point is, whatever she's explaining by way of, hey, it's just after you make all your $3 billion, you can have a dollar and we can take our dollar. She hasn't figured this all out.
Well, look,
she will totally. Oh, can I just say one more thing on that? There was an article this past week with Microsoft guy, Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, he made that crazy discovery. We'll see how good the technology is. It might have just been a CNN article, but apparently he had a breakthrough when it came to solar technology of creating heats high enough.
I'm sorry, I was thinking of something else.
Oh, go ahead. You can like melt cement at prices that actually competes with gasoline or fuel, whatever. I don't know if that's fucking true. It was an article in CNN, but that's the kind of thing that people who are wealthy billionaires just know how to fucking get shit done. And if you leave them alone with their capital, they're going to make investments that help all of us.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I agree with you on that. I know Bill Gates was critical of Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax.
Bezos $1 billion a year on space travel. That's the investment he's making.
Well, look, here's the thing that I just think from one of these debates, right? And this is what's crazy to me, that they don't ask these follow-up questions. You know, the last episode I was making this analogy about boxing and sparring with people when I was talking about, or two episodes ago maybe, when I was talking about Ben Shapiro battling 17-year-old social justice warriors.
Yep.
And I was like, this isn't making you sharp. I mean, you might feel like, you know, you might get these YouTube, you know, titles like Ben Shapiro destroys social justice warrior. But it's like you're battling against someone that like gender exists or whatever, you know. I know people want to go easy on Elizabeth Warren, but it's like, I don't know. This might have a little bit of a unintended consequence of making her weak. But I can't imagine, right, that you would allow someone just right away with the wealth tax. So what she's saying is, what she keeps repeating over and over is 2 cents. All I'm asking you to throw in is 2 cents, a 2-cent tax. And this could pay for all of these things. And it's like, is no one, a moderator, another, you know, one of her opponents on the debate stage, going to be like, but what you mean is 2%, not 2 cents. You're saying 2 cents on every dollar. You're not going to pay for this with 2 cents, right? So like, just say like, you know, no one ever talks about taxes this way. Like no one ever goes, well, all we're asking you to pay if you make $200,000 a year or more is 37 cents. We go 37% because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about 37 cents on every single dollar. In other words, 37%. Okay, like I know that progressive income tax or whatever, but you get what I'm saying? Like no one says the tax rate that you've gotten into now is, oh, you're all the way up the, you know, you used to be in the 23 cent range. Now you're in the 27 cent range. No one talks this way. So why are you saying 2 cents instead of 2%? That's a really easy one for someone to say. I know this sounds better, but why are you like trying to manipulate us into that? And the other thing that's kind of petty, but the more obvious thing is you go like, well, how would you calculate what someone's net worth is? How would you get them to liquidate their net worth? I mean, you're saying you're going to tax 2% of their net worth. What if that's tied up in stocks? What if they own real estate? What if they own paintings? I mean, how are they going to pay you 2% of all of these things? First off, are you going to go get all of these things appraised and then just go with the appraiser? Do we have a backup appraisal? Because, you know, sometimes the appraisal is wrong. So like how exactly are you going to make them sell all of their things and then give you 2% of the proceeds? Like how exactly does this work? How are you going to get this passed? You know, a wealth tax, it seems like a pretty big thing. I mean, I don't know. I think you might need an amendment to the Constitution. We had an amendment to the Constitution for the income tax, right? So a whole new tax, we might need a new amendment to the Constitution. How are you possibly going to get this much support for a whole new tax? You know, so no questions like this are asked at all. They just don't. It's just, yeah, she says for 2 cents, we can give everybody free 9 things. No one pushes her on it at all. So they were very easy on Elizabeth Warren. And but overall, I just thought even with the moderators being easy on her, I thought she did not have a good night. Just nothing compelling about her.
Can we talk about Senator Gorbachev, lady?
Okay, let's go in order of polls. Oh, we'll get to her in a second, okay? Or try at least. All right, you know what?
No. I like to go in order. All right, I want to throw you off your game here.
All right, Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders.
Get that. Listen, where's the old Bernie Sanders that I know and love? The guy who would yell and scream and be entertaining. This guy's just a flat bore. At least he can make it exciting.
He does. He did seem. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's his health issues or something like that. He seemed a little bit less angry and screamy. But I also thought there was something about Bernie Sanders that was like, I guess this is nothing new from from 2 nights ago from the last debate, but he, it's just so repetitive that it's starting to get boring. Like he says nothing new. There were a couple moments he had that I thought were really, really good. A couple things he said that I not just really good politically, like I actually really liked a couple things that he said, but I just, you know, it's like right away the thing with I wrote the damn bill and Trump's a pathological liar and he's the most corrupt president we've ever had. And, you know, we're the only advanced nation that doesn't have health care and the minimum wage and all of these things. Now, whatever, I guess these are things Bernie believes that he's passionate about, but it's just like the exact same thing over and over again, and it gets kind of stale.
You need some new jokes, Bernie.
Yeah, or at least kind of like, I don't know, a new way to present the same idea. Maybe I'm, you know, maybe that's unfair, but it's just that's what I noticed. At least with the I wrote the damn bill thing and that Trump's a pathological liar, just like why? What's the benefit of repeating that exactly the same way again? I don't know. That's just my own personal take. I got to say, I thought it was interesting that he said the thing about Palestinian rights. He said the thing about like, look, he was like, look, I'm pro-Israel, but the Palestinians deserve to be treated with respect. And that got a big applause from the crowd. And that was definitely something that was like, oh, that's outside of the, you know, as Tom Wood says, the 3x5 car index card of allowable opinion. That's a little bit outside of that.
Since he's a Jew, he's allowed to say it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that gives him a little bit of cover to say that. And then at one point, he actually did. He got a question about ending the war in Afghanistan. And I really liked his answer on that. And he did. He hit Joe Biden a little bit for supporting the war in Iraq. He was like, I was against, he goes, I led the effort against the war in Iraq. I was right on that issue. I think, look, I think anybody who was against the war on Iraq has every right to be like, hey, when the decision needed to be made, I got that puppy right. And you guys all got it wrong. So good for him on that. And he said we should pull out of Afghanistan immediately. And he said we should re-question this whole war on terrorism that's really done nothing but damage. So I got to say, there was something about that that I really liked. You know, obviously, like Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is such a fucking socialist. I don't even know. There's so many of them are fucking socialists. As Ludwig von Mises said, you're all a bunch of socialists. So I could say that to all the Democrats and Republicans, pretty much. You're all a bunch of socialists. But he's such a big government guy that he's fucking scary. Like, it's scary the amount that he wants the government to grow. But you got to say there are a few things that Bernie Sanders is pretty fucking good on. And he is pretty decent on the war issue. He never really seems to care to lead with it. But I really do like Bernie Sanders did propose a plan to legalize pot on a national level, and really it like cut the knees out from the federal war on drugs.
Didn't that go to Congress or Senate this week?
I think something you might like be right. Happened. But he had this proposal. I don't know how far it actually got, but it would really kneecap the war on drugs, and I think that would be a really great thing, And it's not a matter of like, you know, despite what some right-wing people will say, where it's like, it's not a matter of promoting degenerate culture or allowing our kids to get high or anything like that. It's like, look, man, pot is in our culture already, whether you like it or not. Feel however you feel about pot. It's fucking out there. And the real question is whether or not you want to give this fucking police state the pretense to fucking mess with anybody that they want to. It's like, oh, I smelled pot. That's why I came. Oh, now all of a sudden that's probable cause for fucking searching somebody. Really? Because you say you smelled something or maybe even really smelled it. So that's now you can go fucking jack up whoever you want to. So that part is really great. But I liked his answer on the war on drugs. I liked his answer on the war on terrorism. Okay. Well, let's go to you because you wanted to do Amy Klobuchar. Let's
Who's
go to
next,
her.
Next, though, in order, Pete?
Next in order would be Pete.
You He's go looking Mayor presidential.
Pete? He is. Mayor Pete is fucking literally. Listen, he just sucks. He's just a fucking establishment.
But he just looks and sounds presidential. But
yes. I'm saying in terms of my like personal judgment, I think he fucking sucks and he has nothing interesting to say. And what he does say is terrible. And he'll be just an establishment fucking, you know, neoliberal
but
left
just
neocon.
Look at it as television.
But he is playing a game right now, which is not a bad game, where he's like, okay, I'm going to play it right down the middle. I'm going to be presidential. I'm not going to stumble on my words like Joe Biden. I'm not going to embrace socialism like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I'm not embracing any of these crazy plans. If someone presents me with a crazy plan, I'll be like, yeah, no, I understand where you want to get there, but let's be realistic about it. And I'm just hoping that people start to realize everybody else in the room is too crazy and I win by default. By the way, not the worst plan.
Yeah, you know,
not the worst plan.
It's like television, and we're casting someone, and so he's just kind of coming in, and he's doing what we're all familiar with, and some of these other characters—they're
overacting.
Yeah, they're overacting. They decided they were going to play these characters, but and like you don't love the guy because there's nothing exotic about it. There's nothing like unique or new, but at least it makes sense for the role. Everyone else, you're like, this doesn't even make sense.
No, I agree with you. Okay, Kamala Harris. I mean, just. Like, I think one of the most unlikable human beings I've ever seen in my life. Just terrible. Terrible. Yeah. You know, even like the thing, she's also, you can tell she's like this kind of nasty, vindictive person. Like, even the fact that she went after Tulsi Gabbard, it's like, what do you even do? You're just trying to settle a score. You just like, she got you, so you should get her now. I mean, if anything, you should be going after people ahead of you in the polls. But she just, I mean, was just terrible. And she certainly will not win this race. And maybe someone will pick her as vice president. And the only reason why she'd get picked is because she's a fucking black woman. That's it. Not African-American, but black. Her parents were like Jamaican and Indian. Oh. So she's not actually African-American. Anyway, So that's literally all I have to say about Kamala Harris. Let's see who else. All right, let's do your lady, Amy Klobuchar. I think you're going to make the same comment that I'm going to make, but I'll give you the chance to do
it first. I can have the honors.
Go for it.
She's slowly turning into Golem, dude.
Dude.
I mean, it looks like Golem when he held on to the ring too long.
I mean, holy shit. She was like fucking Michael J. Fox levels shaky.
Yes.
The entire debate. Dude, her fucking hair was twitching back and forth.
Yeah.
Dude, last time she sounded like she was going to cry.
It's like every she time lost she a talked. Vibrator in her pussy.
And, yes. I mean, dude, that's the best description I've heard so far. It was, I don't know what's going on with her. I don't know if she is sick or she is nervous, but something's going on. She is shaking uncontrollably and is, you know, just horrible. At one point, she said something about, she goes, it shouldn't be the tallest candidate who wins or the thinnest candidate who wins, something like that. And you're like, did you just call attention to the fact that you're chubby? Like, what are you doing? Shouldn't be the tallest or the thinnest or the best looking or the most charismatic or the person who's even got any ideas, but it should be the shakiest person. It's fucking weird.
It looked like
weird performance.
Like she was holding on to the thing like there was an earthquake going on at her seat.
Yeah. It was.
Even her teeth were shaking. I didn't even realize teeth could shake.
Just, it was bizarre. It was bizarre. And just no one likes her. I don't know what else to say. It's like there's nothing about you. You have no redeeming quality. Like, it's not like, you don't have ideas, but you're not charismatic. You don't have ideas, and you're not charismatic. There's nothing there.
This is like bombing in the worst possible. Because, like, I've bombed on stage, and it sucks. But now, how many years has she been a senator for?
Decades.
So she's been around for decades. She thinks this is going to be her big moment, and she gets out on the big stage and realizes nobody likes you and you're not charming, and she's still trying to push forward. Oh my God, I could see why I'd shit my pants live on stage. I could see it.
I mean, she's on top of everything else, she's just not built for that moment, which is just, you know.
It's like Quasimodo made a wish to like some wizard that he could be a beautiful lady, and he's like, this is the best I can do for you, Quasimodo.
It's like, sorry.
Like, you're a lady.
all right. Who else? Are we missing anybody? I mean, let's
Cory Booker. The Ninja Turtle himself. He was out there.
Cory Booker. Okay, so Cory Booker.
Joker-shaped mouth.
Cory Booker is not entirely terrible at politics. His problem is that he comes off like a crazy person.
Okay.
His eyes look crazy. He yells a little bit too much. I will say Cory Booker had one of my favorite moments of the debate.
Did he talk about Kool-Aid again?
No, nothing about Kool-Aid. But no. He said at one point that I thought was actually kind of nice to hear. He said something along the lines of, he goes, because they were talking about the wealth tax and something else. And he was like, you know, we can't just be the party that talks about what we're going to tax. We also have to talk about how we're going to create wealth.
Nice.
And he goes, I was in a black church recently, and I asked the audience in the church, I said, who here wants to be an entrepreneur? And about half of the hands went up. He goes, we can't just be talking about how we're going to tax everybody. We also have to talk about how we're going to help people who want to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah, just let them sell those drugs legally.
Yeah, well, that's...
I mean, that's what they were looking to do, so just legalize it. You won't have to jail them in a little bit.
He goes, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur. What type of company you want to start? Gangbanger? Yeah. Oh, all right. Yep. All right. That was a little bit racist.
I got pissed so bad. I'm sorry.
Thank you, sir. But I did think that it was cool that somebody would at least acknowledge that you can't just talk about taxing everybody as if that's going to be appealing to a large, you know, percentage of the population. I mean, how many people are just living off government money? And they go, yeah, taxes will go up, so there'll be more money coming in. I mean, sure, I guess this idea of just taxing the rich might be appealing to a lot of people, but after a while, once you get into people who are actually working or actually who are entrepreneurs, who are running businesses, those people, I think it's a little bit harder to sneak in the idea that, well, it's just taxing the rich when their tax burden is already pretty bad. And they're like, yeah, you know what? I don't want to hear taxes. I'd actually like to hear about less taxes, or maybe like how you're going to expand opportunities, or how you're going to make it easier for me to actually create. Yeah, I remember a friend of mine who's a real leftist, and he was saying, this was like maybe like 5-6 years ago, so he's like a who's like a struggling young comic. I catch you up, Rob. I was talking about a friend of mine who's a comedian. I don't want to say his name on air, but he was like a younger comic who was kind of like struggling. He was a Canadian guy who's come here from Canada. And he was, you know, whatever. He was like a young comic, like coming up in the game. And he was like a left-leaning kind of socialist-leaning guy, Bernie supporter. And he said at one point to me, he was like, you know, you say all this shit about taxes. He was like, I don't have a problem with taxes. Like, I'm happy to pay my taxes. And I go, how much you make last year? And he was like, oh, well, I don't know exactly like how much I made last year. And anyway, I had to ask him like three different times. He made like under $20,000 last year. And I go, what'd you pay in taxes? He goes, well, I didn't really pay taxes last year. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay. So you don't have a problem paying taxes. But what does that mean? Like, let's ask somebody who really fucking pays money in taxes. And I'll tell you, another thing about it is that he was a single guy. He didn't have a family. It's like, you know, if you're just talking about taxing everything, I'll tell you, and I always, even when I was a young single guy who wasn't making a lot of money, I was against taxation, you know, kind of on principle, at least since I became a libertarian. But I'm kind of, you know, weird in that way. But, you know, it's one thing to talk to a fucking, you know, kid who makes $20,000 a year, like, yeah, people who make money should tax more. But talk to somebody who fucking, you know, has a kid. I mean, let me tell you, since having a kid, it, you know, talk to somebody who makes $120,000 a year and is paying fucking $40,000 a year in taxes that's being taken away from their fucking family. You know, it's a different situation. So I thought it was at least interesting that at least Cory Booker had one point of like, maybe we shouldn't just talk about how we're going to tax so much. That could backfire. So, all right, that's it. Besides that, I didn't really think Cory Booker did much else. Okay, who have we not talked about? Yang.
Yang Gang.
Andrew Yang. I thought he fucking sucked. I thought he really sucked. And I've been kind of kind to Andrew Yang in the past where it's been like, well, at least like he's kind of interesting and different. I just thought it was it's just like he just sounded more and more establishment.
Yeah.
And more boring and typical politician. It's like the one thing that separates you is that you want to give people $1,000 a month.
He also has dumb kids.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's
right. He really does like to bring that up. That's what makes him qualified. It's his dumb retard.
Yeah, well, he brought up...
What's the proper autistic term? I don't want to get in trouble over
here.
He
has an autistic child.
You know me. I'm very PC.
You are.
Inappropriate.
That's right. I will say, though, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is just the way I look at things, but I would never, you know, I remember talking about this with Joe Biden before when Joe Biden brings up his family tragedies so often. He'll bring it up all the
time. Not anymore. He doesn't want to bring up family at all.
Well, now he's
the last time
we
heard him talk about.
That's a good point. But for a long time, he would bring up his son dying, his wife dying, like all this shit. And it's like, I always felt like there was something really disgusting about this. And I felt the same way about Andrew Yang bringing up his having a child with autism. Like, I'm not saying there's anything wrong, like in some forum talking about that or doing work with other people who have children with autism or raising awareness or something. But when you're running for president, to bring up your autistic child to kind of gain some like victimhood points or like play, I personally would just. If you know, listen, I thank God every day that my daughter is healthy and her development has been great and everything like that. And I really, as a parent, I really feel for anybody who has as a kid who has any type of issues. I mean, it's like the scariest thing. Like, I remember when Lauren was pregnant and you go in for like these tests, like, you know, they do the Down syndrome test and like all these different like things. It's fucking terrifying. Like, it is really scary. You're like, I might get a result in an hour that tells me that like, this is my life now. You have a kid with Down syndrome. Like, this is really, it's really, really scary. And thank God my daughter is healthy and, you know, so far, knock on wood. And, you know, it's like the scariest thing on earth is that something could happen to your kid. So I feel for anybody who's got a special needs kid or anything like that. It's a really difficult situation. But I would never bring it up to score some points. I just find that to be really gross. Like, really, like a kind of shitty thing to do. You know, to like bring up as a parent of a special needs child, let me tell you, oh, now I get a little bit extra attention. A little, God, I think that's just a horrible thing to do. horrible thing to like capitalize on your own, you know, like kind of use your kids' special needs to, I thought that was gross. And I thought the thing he said, the thing where they were like, what would you say on a call to Vladimir Putin? And he was like, I would tell him that we're doubling down on our commitment to NATO and I'm not your guy and all this. It's all just so insane. And you would, and I, maybe I expect a little bit more out of Andrew Yang because he's supposed to be like the outsider or something like that. Like, how do you come into this as an outsider? Not go, well, look, you're talking about Vladimir Putin. Forget all this dumb Russiagate nonsense. Here's the thing. Russia has an economy that I believe is smaller than Italy. They're nothing. They've got nothing. Okay? Russia has, Russia's country collapsed. Think about this. In the 20th century, Russia's country collapsed twice. Now, most people in America can't really like understand what that is, that the entire country fucking fell twice. And really, that's not even including the Second World War, where they took huge losses. So maybe even like a third time. There was mass starvation, mass poverty, all these types of problems. They've just kind of barely got back on their feet. They're not a threat to anyone, except in one way. They've got a shit ton of nukes. That's the only thing that is a threat to any of us, is if there's a hot war with Russia. So obviously, for any sane human being, the only thing you'd want is to avoid a hot war with Russia. This is why the one good thing that Donald Trump ran on, which he has not followed through on, but was like, let's talk to Russia. Why are we like fucking, why are we trying to like increase hostilities with Russia? Let's have detente. Like, what is this? And the fact that anyone would even say, well, I'd be real tough with Putin when we called. Andrew Yang is a very smart guy. He's quirky and different than the rest of them. But I thought his debate performance fucking sucked last night. Like, fuck all that.
I know we brought it up before, but just to remind you how bullshit of bullshit the whole Russia thing is. I remember when Sarah Palin was running. She was going to be VP, and they asked her, well, what gives you any credentials for foreign policy? And she goes, well, I want to remind everyone that I'm from Alaska, which borders on Russia, which is an adversary of ours. And so I'm more in tune with foreign politics. And they laughed. They're like, Russia? The fuck are you talking about? No one gives a shit about Russia.
And that was 2008. And then in 2012, when Mitt Romney said our biggest geopolitical enemy is Russia, Barack Obama said, and I quote, he goes, hey, Mitt Romney, the 1980s called. They want their foreign policy back.
There you go.
That was his line. Like, what are you fucking talking about? The Soviet Union fell. What's the issue here, man?
I'm droning kids in another country. You're not paying attention to what's going on here?
He goes, we're killing Packy babies. Come on. We're killing Packy kids, baby. Let's fucking jump in. Get in the car, man. We're murdering Browns. Russians. Who cares? That's yesterday. Goes, let me tell you what I got cooking in Yemen. I'm trying to think 2012, right? Was that a year? No, it's 2013. Whatever. Anyway, okay, so Yang sucks. Blah, 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 blah. Is there anyone we didn't cover? Anyone else worth covering? I don't even know. Let me think. Klobuchar did Klobuchar, did Yang. Obviously Tulsi, Mayor Pete Butt stuff. Cory Booker. Yeah, I don't really care about any of the other people. All right, there's my debate recap. That's it. That's what I got for you guys. I hope you didn't watch it. There was nothing that great. I played Tulsi's clips. That's all you needed to see.
How many more of these are going to do?
72.
Move it along.
73, now that you said that. You want to go for more? You want to go for 74? All right, Rob. All right, guys. Listen, thanks for listening. We'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode. Peace.